All right, strap yourselves in for this one because we are diving into one heck of a story.
Yeah.
The JAL-1628 incident.
Mm-hmm.
This is a case that has had, honestly, everybody talking for decades.
Right.
UFO enthusiasts, skeptic scientists, everybody.
It's one of those.
If you are a seasoned UFO aficionado or just curious about this strange event, we are going to break it all down.
Absolutely.
And you've given us a ton to sift through.
It is amazing the amount of material we have on this.
Yeah.
I mean, we have the pilot's firsthand account, transcripts from air traffic control,
oh, yeah,
radar data analysis, and even internal memos from the FAA.
Wow.
It's like piecing together a puzzle, but you have pieces from every different angle.
Okay, so let's set the scene.
Right.
It's November 17th, 1986, frigid Alaskan night, JAL-1628, a Boeing 747 cargo plane cruising at 35,000 feet.
Just another day.
Everything seems routine until Captain Kenju Tarauchi, the pilot, reports seeing something unbelievable.
Unbelievable is an understatement.
Unbelievable out his window.
Yeah.
What Tarauchi describes isn't just some twinkling lights in the sky. No.
No, no.
He first sees two smaller objects, extremely bright, like zipping around near his planes, almost like they're playing tag, moving erratically. And then this huge E object appears.
Okay.
And that's when things really get strange.
Yeah. Tarauchi's description of this object is pretty extraordinary.
Really is.
He says it was the size of two aircraft carriers.
I mean, what?
With distinct lights and what looks like exhaust.
Yeah.
He even compared the experience to meeting the future.
Oh, wow.
And says he felt warmth on his face when its lights shone on the cockpit.
Okay.
It's a very vivid account.
Yeah.
Kind of unsettling.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Right. Tarauchi was not some wide-eyed rookie pilot.
Oh, no.
This guy was a seasoned captain and, get this,
yeah,
a former fighter pilot for the Japan Air Defense Force.
Wow. Yeah. That's...
This background is so crucial because fighter pilots are trained to identify aircraft. So this is not just some guy looking out the window going, oh, I think I saw something.
Right, right.
This is a guy who knows what he's looking at.
Yeah.
And his account really throws a wrench into things.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at what was happening on the ground.
So while Tarauchi is having what may be the most intense flight of his life down on the ground at air traffic control.
Yeah.
Things are getting pretty chaotic.
The air traffic control transcripts are a goldmine.
Yeah.
You can practically feel the tension and confusion as this incident unfolds at first.
Yeah.
Air traffic control tells Tarauchi there's no other traffic in the area.
Makes sense.
They're baffled when he insists on deviating from his course to avoid something.
Imagine being that air traffic controller.
Oh, my God.
And this very experienced pilot is like, nope, there's something out there. We got to move.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be freaking out a little bit.
Yeah.
So the controllers, they're scrambling. They're asking other planes in the area.
Yeah.
United Airlines Flight 69.
Yep.
A military C-130
uh-huh.
to check if they see anything.
Right.
There's even talk of scrambling fighter jets.
Oh, wow.
They're pulling out all the stops to try and identify this mystery object.
Did any of those pilots see anything?
That's where things get even more complicated.
Oh, boy.
Neither the United Airlines flight nor the military C-130 reported seeing anything unusual.
Okay.
And then there's the radar data.
Mm-hmm.
Analysis shows some uncorrelated primary returns near JAL-1628's location.
Okay.
Now, for those unfamiliar with radar jargon,
right,
this basically means the radar picked up signals that didn't match any known aircraft.
Oh.
The FAA initially thought these signals might be a split image of the JAL plane itself.
Okay.
Kind of like an echo effect.
Oh, like a ghost.
Yeah.
A ghost of the plane.
A ghost, exactly.
Okay.
But they ultimately concluded that there was no definitive radar evidence of another aircraft.
Okay. So if they saw something on their radar screens at first and other pilots were asked to look, but no one else saw anything, what could it have been?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right.
And to make things even more complicated.
Oh, no.
We have to consider the accounts from Tarauchi's crew.
Okay. His own crew.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's so.
All right. Well, let's get into that.
Yeah.
But first, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay. While Tarauchi had this really intense close encounter, his co-pilot and flight engineer, they had a slightly different experience.
Okay.
They both saw a peculiar light.
Okay.
But they didn't witness the same crazy scenario as the captain.
It's almost like they got the trailer and he got the whole movie.
Yeah.
Huh.
The flight engineer even mentioned that he struggled to see the object.
Okay.
And wasn't sure if it was something weird or the lights of a distant town.
Oh, wow.
Another thing is that there's not a lot of chatter in the cockpit.
Really?
You'd think that there would be more discussion.
Yeah.
You know, reactions of disbelief.
Yeah, for sure.
But the recording is really calm. considering what Tarochi said he saw.
Do you think that they were all in shock?
It's possible.
Or going back to what you said earlier, is it possible this was mistaken identity? Could strange atmosphere conditions create illusions?
It's possible.
Yeah.
But before we jump to conclusions,
right,
it's important to remember that this wasn't Tarochi's first encounter with unexplained aerial phenomena.
He had seen this type of thing before.
According to Tarochi, yes.
Wow.
5 years before JLS 1628, he reported seeing what he called a mothership near Taipei.
Oh, wow.
And then he even had another sighting from his home in Japan.
So this wasn't an isolated incident for him. I mean, does this suggest a pattern of seeing things that aren't really there? Or could this make his accounts more credible?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
It's one worth considering.
Yeah.
And it brings us to another crucial part of our deep dive here.
Okay.
Which is the FAA's investigation.
Right.
They took Tarochi's account seriously enough to launch a full-blown investigation.
Wow.
They interviewed the crew, they analyzed radar data, and they even reached out to the military for more information.
So they dug deep into this.
Oh, yeah.
Did they find out anything from the crew interviews? I mean, did they get the impression that Tarochi was making this up?
Not at all.
Okay.
The reports describe Tarochi as well-balanced, professional, rational.
Okay.
And importantly, not affected by drugs or alcohol.
Okay, so very credible.
They even noted that all three crew members, Tarochi, the co-pilot Tamura, and the flight engineer Tsukuba, appeared to be credible witnesses.
Okay, so we have a credible pilot, and to some extent his crew supports his account.
Right.
Did the investigators look into Tarochi's background at all?
Yeah.
Was there anything in his past that could explain this?
Well, during his interview, Tarochi admitted that these weren't his first encounters with the unexplained.
Oh.
He told investigators about the mothership sighting near Taipei.
Yeah.
And the sighting from his home in Japan.
So he was upfront about his previous experiences.
Yeah.
That's interesting. What else came out of the interviews?
One of the details was Tarochi's description of how the object moved.
Okay.
He claimed that as he maneuvered the plane, turning, descending, the object mirrored his actions.
So it wasn't just the stationary light in the distance.
Right.
It was actively interacting with the plane.
Exactly.
That adds another layer of strange to this.
It really does.
How did the investigators respond to all of this? Did they offer any possible explanations?
They were very cautious.
Yeah.
But they did suggest a possible explanation for a later sighting Tarochi had.
He had another encounter?
He did, but it wasn't nearly as dramatic.
Okay.
While flying cargo from Europe to Anchorage, Tarochi reported seeing lights that looked like a spaceship.
Okay.
But there were no unusual radar contacts this time.
Hmm.
And even his crew, different crew, weren't certain what they'd seen.
What did the FAA say about this second sighting?
Yeah.
Did they connect it to the first one?
They suggested it might have been a bounce light effect.
Bounce light effect.
Yeah, Tarochi was flying over villages at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the FAA explained that the freezing temperatures, combined with something called an atmospheric temperature inversion, could have created an illusion of lights hovering in midair.
So kind of like a mirage, but caused by the weather?
Exactly. Light from the villages below.
Uh-huh.
Could have been reflected off ice crystals in the inversion layer.
Okay.
Making it look like there were lights in the sky.
But why doesn't that fit with the first sighting?
Well, the November sighting was much more complex.
Okay.
We had multiple objects, the strange radar readings and visual confirmation from both ground controllers and other pilots in the area.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a quick glimpse of some lights.
Right.
It was a prolonged event that lasted for over half an hour.
Right. So we're back to square one.
It seems that way.
No real explanation for what Tarochi and his crew experienced that night.
Yeah.
It's frustrating, you know?
Yeah.
All that effort into the investigation. We're left with more questions than answers.
And here's where things get even more intriguing.
Oh, no.
The military's involvement, or rather lack thereof, in this case is one of the most fascinating parts.
Because they weren't exactly eager to share information, were they?
No, they weren't.
What was their take on everything?
Well, when this was all happening, air traffic controllers first contacted the military's Regional Operations Control Center.
Okay.
Or ROCC.
Okay.
Asking if their radar was picking up anything near JAL-SUM-628.
Okay.
And at first, the RCC confirmed they were tracking something in the same area.
So both civilian and military radars seemed to confirm what Tarochi was seeing.
At least for those first few minutes.
What happened next?
That's where things get weird.
Of course.
The ROCC soon reported losing track of the object on their radar.
Okay.
And then when the FAA pressed for more information, things went quiet.
Really?
The military was reluctant to share anything further.
Wow.
Even suggesting that what they initially detected might have been just electronic clutter.
Electronic clutter?
Yeah.
That seems like a weak explanation.
Right.
Especially since they confirmed a radar contact at first.
Yeah.
It almost feels like they were trying to downplay the whole thing.
It's possible.
Yeah.
This lack of transparency often fuels speculation and conspiracy theories.
For sure.
And it just adds another layer of mystery to this case.
If the military did have more information, if they knew what was going on that night, why wouldn't they share it?
Right.
What were they trying to hide?
That's the question.
Yeah.
Some people believe the military might have been tracking something they couldn't explain.
Right.
Something they considered a national security threat.
Right.
Others believe they just didn't want to cause panic.
Sure.
Or maybe they didn't want to admit they'd been outmaneuvered by some unknown technology.
Wow. So we have a credible pilot with multiple UFO sightings, chaos at air traffic control,
yeah,
radar anomalies, and a tight-lipped military.
A lot.
Where does all this leave us?
I don't know.
Are we any closer to understanding what happened to JAL 628? I feel like we're kind of going in circles here, you know?
Yeah.
We have all this data, eyewitness accounts,
mm-hmm,
air traffic control, radar analysis.
Right.
But it's also contradictory.
It is.
And the official explanations, they just don't cut it.
No.
This JAL 1728 incident, it's one of the most
absolutely
well-documented and puzzling,
yeah,
UFO sightings ever.
It really is.
But you're right. It's a case that just defies easy answers.
It does.
And it continues to spark debate and discussion, yeah, all these years later.
It makes you think about some bigger questions.
It does. It does.
You know, questions about how much we really understand,
yeah,
about the universe, the limits of human perception.
Yeah.
And, you know, the possibility that we might not be alone.
Exactly. I mean, it's more than just debating whether or not it happened.
Right.
This makes you think about that.
It really does.
About those bigger things.
It's interesting to think about the cultural context of all this, too.
Yeah.
You know, this wasn't just a random event. It happened, yeah, in the 1980s.
Yeah.
A time when UFO sightings,
yeah,
were very much in the popular consciousness.
Zeitgeist, yeah.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, movies like Close Encounters of the Third Kind and E.T.
Oh, yeah.
They really captured people's imagination.
They really did.
There was this sense of excitement, but also maybe a bit of fear.
Uh-huh.
About the idea of extraterrestrial life.
Right. So Tarochi's experience tapped into that.
Totally.
This pre-existing fascination with the unknown.
Yeah. It makes you wonder if that influenced how this was reported.
Exactly.
Or how the investigation was conducted.
Right.
It's a good point. I mean, the media really ran with this story.
Yeah.
This became an international sensation overnight.
Huge.
You had all the headlines and the news reports and the documentaries speculating about what he'd seen.
Yeah, and that kind of attention puts a lot of pressure on authorities.
Totally.
Sometimes leading to rushed conclusions or even attempts to cover things up.
Yeah, for sure. So it just adds another layer of complexity to the whole situation.
For sure.
It all boils down to that age-old question.
Yeah.
Do we believe what we see with our own eyes?
Right.
Or do we believe what we're told?
That's a big one.
In the case of JAL 1628, those two things,
right,
they just don't seem to line up.
They don't.
I mean, we have this credible pilot.
Yeah.
Other people saw something.
Mm-hmm.
You have the strange radar data.
Right.
And then silence.
Yeah.
From the military. The very people who might have the answers.
That's the heart of the mystery.
It is. It really is.
And it's what makes cases like this so compelling.
For sure.
You know, they force us to question what we think we know.
Right.
To challenge the limits of our understanding.
Yeah.
And to really grapple with the fact that there's still so much we don't know.
That we just don't know about the world.
About the world around us.
So where do we go from here?
I don't know.
What can we take away from all of this?
You know, I think the most important takeaway is open-mindedness.
Yeah.
When we're faced with something we don't understand,
yeah,
it's easy to dismiss it.
For sure.
Try to explain it away,
right,
with familiar ideas.
Right.
But sometimes the truth might be outside of our comfort zone.
For sure.
Beyond what we currently think is possible.
Yeah.
You know, the JAL 1628 incident,
yeah,
reminds us to be curious.
Yeah.
To be a little skeptical.
Yeah.
And to be willing to consider all possibilities.
Right.
Even the ones that seem strange or unbelievable.
It's a reminder that the universe is a vast and mysterious place.
It is.
And it's still full of surprises.
Absolutely.
Maybe someday we'll have the answers to the questions that have been swirling around this case for decades.
Right.
But until then, we're left with the stories, the evidence, and the enduring mystery of JAL 61028.
It's a good one.
What do you think happened that night over Alaska?
Right. Let us know.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into one of aviation's most perplexing encounters.